Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Lady Lead on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org. I tried to get you. Oh, I tried, but I got it wrong. So I wanna take you to a place where we belong. Where you got it easy. And all starts with a dollar sign. And you got it, you got it, you got it, you might it. And do anything you wanted to do. Cause it's all for you. You've seen the signs, you've felt the beats. It's time to meet with Jake Lee. You've kissed the lips of Java scripts. It's time to quit with Jake Lee.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Modern Web Podcast. Today, we have a very special podcast for you. We are speaking with a few really passionate team members of the Ember accessibility community. So I wanted to go ahead and introduce our moderator, which is Nathan Hammond. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi, and you can find Nathan at Nathan Hammond on Twitter. And Nathan, I'll let you take it from here, introduce everybody.
Excellent. So hi, I'm Nathan Hammond. And today we're going to talk a little bit about Ember accessibility and what accessibility looks like inside of Ember and single page applications in general. On the podcast today, we have Rob DeLuca.
Hello, everybody.
We have Suze Hinton.
Hi, everybody.
We have Jamie White.
Hey, everybody.
We have Ben Holmes.
Hello.
We have Melanie Sumner.
Hi.
We have George Chapman.
Hi, everyone.
And we're all going to talk and tell the story about how we ended up where we are and the things that we're working on. So start actually with Rob. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience with accessibility and why it is that you care about accessibility?
Yeah. So I'm gonna go out on a limb and say I'm a little bit of a special snowflake on this. My mom is 100% blind, and she has been for my entire life. She went blind a year after I was born, and I watched her go through her life and struggle through technology and things like that. I'm sensitive to this issue because what I build and what I do and what I send to my mom, I want everything to be usable for her. So that's kind of like where I come from, is I understand the struggles that she has every day. I have to pay some credit cards for her because she can't get in there, and her screen reader can't read things, or she doesn't understand things that are happening. So for me, it's like near and dear to my heart. But I don't know if I expect people to be as passionate because, like I said, I seriously witnessed her get very frustrated, slam her laptop closed or whatever. It's kind of a big deal to me.
Sure. And so how has that changed as time has gone on? Have things gotten better? Have things gotten worse? Is tooling improving? What's it like? What has the landscape been like for your mother and the degree to which you've had to help?
It's actually gotten a lot better. So to give a little bit of a timeline, she started getting on technology and using the internet and stuff in about 2010. And at that time, she had a Nokia N95 or whatever like that. It was supposed to be the accessible phone. It cost $2,500, and it basically was a paperweight. If I'm being honest, it was nice. I liked the idea of it, but it just wasn't that good. And then enter, I think a year later, year and a half later, the iPhone. The iPhone was a complete game changer for her. She was able to get on Facebook. She was able to check emails, look at all the cool apps. Recently she just started using the emojis. So she's now acting like a millennial. Things have absolutely gotten a lot better. There was a time where she had to only use the native Facebook app because it was just a little bit more accessible for her. Recently things have gotten a lot better for her. But there's still a lot of ways to go. But for sure, she has stopped contacting me for a lot of things. She used to say, "Oh, I accidentally posted this on Facebook. Can you go delete this for me? Because I can't find it anymore. I don't get that anymore." So it's definitely gotten better.
Okay, excellent. And what is your experience as that has come for single page applications?
Honestly, I don't really know if she uses single page applications. I know she can't use any Ember apps for the most part. And yeah, it's tough to say because I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if any single page apps. I mean, the closest maybe would be Facebook. They're very JavaScript heavy.
Jamie, I was wondering if you can say a little bit about what you were talking about at EmberConf of last year. You were talking about building a community and making sure that we were able to actually all address the things that were important, whether that's building the community itself and achieving things as part of that community. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, so for anyone who didn't see it, I gave a talk at EmberConf 2015, and broadly the topic was the design and engineering of open source communities and how we take the same methodical approach to the software itself and apply that to every other aspect of how this community operates. So whether that be graphic design, the language we use, the kind of shared vocabulary that we build up, and the identification of the different roles people can play in the community, and I think the development of subteams recently is an example of that in action. These things I think are cow paths, to borrow a term that Tom and Yehuda have used quite a lot. You know, these things do happen naturally in a community, but sometimes stating it explicitly, like letting everyone know that this thing is happening and then giving it a name, can really help leverage what's going on and give the people who are doing it that bit more power and that bit more voice, and then enable other people to see this thing is happening and go get involved. And so we see this happen with deployment, we've seen it happen with documentation, we've seen it happen with everything around meetups and the Tomster and the recent addition of Zoe, and recognizing the fact that Tomster can help us to say things about the community and let people know that we want them in our community, and try and reflect that in the language and graphics and ideas that we use. And I think we have an opportunity to do a similar thing in the way we talk about accessibility in Ember. So there is engineering to do, there's software to write, and there are things to learn about. But I think also making these ideas and these tools a regular part of the conversation, giving them a set of shared vocabulary that we all use, a graphic language or a common way that we speak about this, and then identifying the particular roles that people play when it comes to accessibility. So who within the Ember community is best placed to take our message to the platform vendors, to browser vendors and to operating systems developers, to let them know what works and doesn't work and how we can figure out how to best leverage the platform, who in the community best connects us to the work going on in the Angular world and the React world, and when it comes to unilateral projects like AXE, which is a really interesting project to bring together all the best knowledge about automated accessibility linting and provide that as a cross-framework, cross-platform library. And it's, as someone within the Ember community, I can hear that that's happening and appreciate that it's a good thing, but not necessarily know how to get involved with that project directly or involve it in the way I use Ember. But if I can see a kind of path of people, I can say, oh, well, Nathan's definitely involved with that. Maybe I can go ask Nathan, hey, Nathan, how do I use AXE in my project? And he tells me that, oh, well, you know, we're working on an add-on that helps integrate with that, but actually they need help in this particular aspect, documenting how this particular part works. So that's a smattering of the thoughts I have on this topic. And as a meetup organizer, I'm well placed to put some of those ideas in play because I have an opportunity to make sure we have talks on this topic as frequently as humanly possible. And even more than that, to make sure that we have talks on this topic that are quite granular in nature. so that not every accessibility talk is about the entire problem domain, that some of them are about one particular technique. And I think as a member of the community, once you've seen somebody give a talk about one particular technique well applied that can solve a real problem, that then gives you the encouragement to go and do a similar talk yourself. And before you know it, you have a cascade of people putting this kind of information out into the world.
All right. So, Ben, Jamie mentioned just randomly getting involved in the accessibility community. Can you tell me kind of exactly how that happened for you?
Yeah, for sure. So at Zesty in San Francisco, we hosted a hack day where everybody could come together and try and put some work into developing some like areas where they just haven't had an opportunity to work in the Ember community. And I know that Nathan had been wanting to put together a piece of work for enabling screen readers in Ember. And loads of other people had similar projects that they were working on. I wasn't even expecting to have an opportunity to do any coding because I was running around like a crazy thing. But come down in the afternoon and I thought, okay, I'll pair with Nathan. So I hadn't really ever done any particular work on accessibility before. I'd worked on projects before where it was a concern, but never like any explicit work into that domain. I definitely never used a screen reader before, for example.
You then went and gave a talk this past week at EmberConf. So can you tell me a little bit about how that came about and what you were trying to communicate during your presentation?
So on the back of doing this pairing, we got an Ember add-on out there released that would start enabling Ember apps to work better with screen readers. In particular, giving users control over the ability to make a screen reader announce information that's changing on the page. And as a group, we discussed how we could get that word out there. We're really lucky to have Jamie around as a meetup organizer because there's a lot of leverage in organizing talks there, but also Leia's really interested in getting the word out in terms of how we can improve accessibility in the Ember community. So we managed to convince her to get a lightning talk in at the last minute.
So we've been doing a lot of work, and what Ben didn't mention is that over the past week, we've managed to land Ember accessibility as an add-on into Ember Observer, and we've made that entire experience more accessible as well. We've been working with Katie Gingler, who is the one who maintains an Ember Observer, to possibly come up with a way to score add-ons that include accessibility features to make sure that we do not... So you get your point for whether or not your add-on is actually accessible. So that is something that is ongoing work in that space. In addition, we have other people who are building Ember applications hanging around, and that would be Melanie, and she is on a team who is actively, or maybe the entire team, who is actively aiming to build kind of an extensible platform which is accessible. But that platform itself is built in Ember. So I was wondering, what has been easy for you, Melanie? What has been hard? What has been interesting? And what have you learned along the way?
Sure. What's been easy has been HTML5. The spec authors and the browser implementers did a fantastic job in making sure that if you write good code, it's accessible by default, which is incredibly helpful. And it also helps people, developers especially, understand the importance of good semantics. So that's been the easy part. Pretty much everything else has been the hard part. Let's start with the tools that we use. We actually had to choose which browser platform combination to officially support, because we had too many browser tool combination differences, and we found it absolutely impossible to make it work completely, all browsers, any platform. For this project, the supported option is actually Firefox and NVDA, mostly because JAWS ends up being cost prohibitive, even for a large enterprise organization, which I have to say probably surprised me the most. And that's been a challenge as well, because while NVDA is free, due to the security environment of an enterprise building or corporation, we have to do a special request for every version of NVDA that we want. So while we're working through the red tape to get automatic updates like we get for, you know, Chrome, Firefox, all these things are, the updates are automatically pushed to our machines, we don't get that yet for NVDA. So I generally have a separate laptop with current NVDA, and I'll run some basic code in like a code pen or Ember Twiddle or something, and we'll check it there and if it works, you know. But that's definitely a challenge. And then we come to team knowledge is a challenge. Ember is a fantastic tool choice, in my opinion, for teams that have a wide range of development experience. Ember's incredibly opinionated, so it gives you one way to do something. So you get a lot better consistent code. This, however, doesn't necessarily apply to accessibility because some of the spec just doesn't work yet in the browser or in NVDA. And then you have people trying to put incorrect roles on things, or we also get a lot of false positives with QA, which can really cut into development time. This doesn't work on this browser. Well, it's a limitation of the tool we're using. Okay, so we close the ticket, and then they'll take a screenshot and reopen the ticket. So I spend a good 3 to 4 hours a week just reclosing tickets, saying, no, really, guys, this is not going to work. Please stop doing this. And I think the last of the biggest challenges is empathy. Does the person with a disability or the person who's using the assistive technology, do they actually use our app the way we think they use our app? A lot of the times, this answer is actually no. That real-time feedback from people who are testing the app out for us, who say, no, it shouldn't work like this. We have some developers who have a tendency of thinking how it should work, and then they override all the default behavior. Well, that doesn't really work, does it? So teaching developers, hey, you have to also have the empathy for the user who's using this. That's super important.
Excellent. And so your experience is in building this application. Do you think that the people who use your application to build additional tools are going to be able to be successful? What will make them be able to be successful?
They will be successful because we've built it in for them.
Okay.
We haven't left it to chance. We haven't given them that extra hurdle to jump. We've designed the components in such a way they do the thing they're supposed to do, and that's it. And we provide very explicit directions on how to use them and in what instances. And having this, we actually have a few apps who are using our beta version, and they're pretty good so far. So it's really encouraging.
And I think that that shows the power of being accessible by default. You've built an application that if all of the guardrails are followed, you end up at the very end with something that without any particular thought or strong attention to accessibility, it magically supports the vast majority of the use cases. That's something that I think that we, as a Ember community, would like to accomplish. I'm going to try Suze again. So can you tell me a little bit about your experience at Kickstarter and the investments that you have made in accessibility and why?
Sure. So accessibility definitely became a much bigger conversation when we implemented internationalization support on the website. So that was about 18 months ago, I think, that conversation started. And we see internationalization as an accessibility issue and something that we want to support, you know, on the internet as a whole. And so once that was implemented, where we have our website in a bunch of different languages and not just relying on Google Translate, myself and David Peter decided to push more of a also accessibility from a technical website perspective as well. And so we didn't have a lot of good accessibility support out of the box for the Kickstarter website when it was written. And so this was more of a retroactive kind of fitting. So we've done things like David implemented a really, really good caption parser. So when you upload your videos, we're able to support captions in English and all the other languages as well. And also, if you don't have captions already, we have a live caption editor where you can watch the video and create captions on the fly, which is a big deal. We've also had a few other things where we've really started thinking about accessibility when new features come out now. So it's much more part of the process. We get designers involved with the developers a lot more early on so we can provide that feedback. So even just simple things like if you have auto-playing videos, have a preference for people to be able to turn that off. And, you know, that addresses things like people are on limited bandwidth, such as myself today, and also people have motion sickness issues with videos that they're not prepared to, you know, to have playing automatically on them. So we've definitely tried to, out of the gate from now on, start improving the accessibility of the website.
And can you tell me about your experience using the accessibility add-ons in the Ember ecosystem?
Right, so we've had some pretty good success with that so far. We've definitely been trying to stimulate education among the other developers at Kickstarter. So we have been looking at Trent Willis's accessibility testing add-ons, which have been really cool. So we've had some success with that where we've built that into our continuous integration flow so that people can already be thinking, well, I need to do these things rather than have my tests fail and then have to go back and fix them. So that's been really wonderful for education. Right now, we're exploring a few of the add-ons for things like route announcing, which I'm sure you're very familiar with. So we're really excited to test out the A11Y Ember add-on that Nathan, you've been working on. So that's the main part of it. The rest tends to be some of the manual things that you need to do with single page apps, such as maintaining correct focus and things like that. We use a focus mix-in, I believe, to do that. So it helps us be able to just quickly manually refocus when a component is destroyed, for example. So that's been really cool too.
Is that the focusable component?
Yes, that's the one.
That's a add-on that's been created by Will Hastings, who's also a very interested member of the Ember accessibility community. All right, going to move on just a little bit here and ask George a few questions. So George has been introduced to me as a person who over this coming week or this past week, we'll be doing a bunch of testing and reviewing of web applications to make sure that they are accessible. And was something that he was actually going to kind of explain a little bit. And so, George, I was wondering a little bit how you kind of evaluate usability and accessibility of web applications. And I say usability in the sense of usability while using assistive technology.
Yeah, it's so just to give a bit of background on my sort of entrance into this field, the company that I work for, which is called Blazy, we are essentially an independent consulting firm, and we're basically brought in to mostly corporate environments that employ single page web applications and often, you know, much older desktop applications, to evaluate the accessibility of the software and to try and determine if the application is usable and if users within the organization, often, you know, particularly blind users, if they're able to perform their roles and tasks, you know, as the application is deployed to them. And what we're increasingly seeing is, you know, that applications are becoming more and more web-based and are employing newer technologies, using Ember, using Angular, using React. And the other really interesting thing is that although the company that I work for has been in this field for a very long time, web technology is still something that I don't think is as prominent in a corporate environment. So the tools that we use to test are still quite... they're still quite rudimentary. So we don't really use automated testing. We don't really rely on outside tools all that much, aside from some color contrasting tools and tools that basically help us just check for focus. But what we do...
Why is that?
You mean why don't we use automated tools? It's just something that I think... coming from an industry that I think, you know, how can I explain this? So Blazy has its roots in hardware accessibility and selling like braille displays and hardware that essentially it was sort of like the early beginnings of accessible hardware and human computer interaction. So. I think it's just a case of the kinds of applications that we deal with, because they're still very much like backwards compatible with systems that run on XP, or systems that, as you can imagine, in banking environments and insurance environments, they don't really work so well with I suppose the newer tools that you have available, you know. And also due to security concerns, a lot of companies will sort of say, we don't really want you to bring in outside tools. We'd prefer if you use this very restricted development environment that we've set up for you here, which obviously makes it quite difficult for us. So we have to very much rely on using the screen reader, specifically JAWS, which is developed by Freedom Scientific, and essentially running through the application as the user would. So one thing it does help with is we don't have to imagine what the experience is like for the user. We essentially get the full experience of what the blind user or, you know, the visually impaired user would actually see or experience through this application using JAWS, how that text would be structured, how that text would be displayed on Braille, how it would be spoken to them, how they would navigate certain applications. And the holes in the web apps become very apparent very quickly. So this past week, I've pretty much been doing some internal evaluation for one of our corporate clients. And the kinds of things that we tend to come across are, you know, they're pretty basic issues. It's usually things like field labeling and focus issues, things like that. And it largely just involves us sitting there with developer tools and with JAWS and painstakingly going through each and every segment of the application to check and see which elements can retain focus, which elements have a meaningful structure and meaningful flow, and if they have text alternatives, things like that. It's very sort of bare bones, but it's the best way to ensure that a user gets a very consistent experience using the technology that's available to them.
Excellent. So at this point, we've now kind of gone through everybody's story, what they're working on, and things that are going on in the accessibility community. I was wondering if maybe, Jamie, you could say a little bit about what it's been like building this community, because I think you were the first one to be quick to say, hey, let's all get in a room and have a conversation. So how do we build this community further? Who should we follow? What should we keep up with? Where should we go for resources on accessibility inside of the Ember and general web community?
So for me, it began with noticing that Ember A11Y, the add-on, had been published. I was working on an application, and we wanted to do the kind of thing that Mel was talking about, where we have, that Mel and Suze were both talking about, where we have automated accessibility linting. I was vaguely aware that that such a thing was possible, and then discovered that something had been implemented in Emberland, and I was like, okay, so who made this? Arranged to speak with you, Nathan, and with Rob as well, who I knew had been involved with it, but largely it was by first coming across a piece of software and then wanting to speak to its authors. And then in a half-hour conversation with you guys, the network of people started to become clearer. And so as I kind of took all the names that you'd thrown at me and started watching talks on YouTube, and it became clear that there was at least one person in every framework, I'm going to say framework community, but what I really mean is a kind of like cluster of people around an open source project. So React had someone, Angular had someone, Ember has someone, and these people were all in their ways connected to the larger accessibility community. And that led me to people like Leonie Watson, who is, she is co-chair of the W3C's Web Platform Working Group, and watched a load of her videos, got really excited about the ideas that she presents and the work that she does. Sent her an email saying, hey, I know you normally talk at big conferences, but would you be interested in speaking at a tiny Ember meetup? And she said yes, so she's coming to speak next month. And through her, another bunch of contacts from the standards community emerged. So I think it's following the path from person to person, from add-on author to speakers, finding people's talks, finding I've seen some really interesting design posts recently. There's a guy called Adam Morse. I will he wrote a blog post. Let me just find the title. I think it's worth a read. This popped up on Twitter for me recently, and this is one that's more aimed at designers. He wrote an excellent blog post called The Veil of Ignorance. It's a really nice piece on basically stripping away all your own assumptions about how applications should work and reimagining a world where you could have any of a number of impairments, and trying to make the playing field as level as possible from that point of view. So emailed him, and he's going to be giving a talk hopefully in June. So it didn't take very much effort at all to start to make connections with people who know about this topic. And that was quite enlightening for me. I think it's a bit like learning about anything within a realm like this. You find one person who has some knowledge of it, some demonstrable knowledge that you know of because they've given a talk, or they've written a library, or they've written a blog post, or they have one tweet or even one retweet on the topic, and you just ask them, hey, I'd like to know a little bit more about this. Who else should I talk to? So I'm just going to bring up some notes that I made for a talk on this topic recently, just so that I can spell out some of the key names that jumped out to me. So I mentioned Leonie Watson already. Marcy Sutton is an important person. She was heavily involved with Angular and now the Axe project, and the Axe is the unilateral toolkit that I talked about earlier. Let's see. So Jesse Beach, I believe I'm right in saying, has been involved, or in fact spearheaded React, or the React community's efforts with accessibility. And there's a guy called Joshua Marshall, who was formerly head of accessibility at Government Digital Services here in the UK. He's since moved on, but he wrote a lot of really interesting stuff on the GDS blog, and that's well worth a read. And through following those people and their tweets, you will quickly be led onto others. Start following them, and you'll be led onto more and more people. And you go from having heard that accessibility is a thing you should do, and knowing that the web platform provides some tooling for it, to suddenly having a number of streams of information telling you what you need to know and what the latest news is about every given part. So something really nice that happened was, so I followed Marcy Sutton, and I think through some kind of retweet or something like that, came across a Tumblr called A11Y Wins, and one of the first posts that popped up after I started following that Tumblr was the WordPress project recently committed to every part of core WordPress meeting the AA standard for accessibility, which is part of the standards body's specifications for it. And that means every bundled template with WordPress will meet those guidelines. And then I was imagining, you know, what if that kind of attention to the platform could roll out to the entire WordPress plugin community? And if that same thing can happen in Ember as well, I mean, that's just tremendous. And that means that, as you put so nicely earlier, Nathan, it means that we don't need to pay specific attention to these things, but they will cover the vast majority of use cases by default out of the box with this kind of ground up community effort.
Excellent. And so I've seen a couple of questions go back and forth. So all of these standardization efforts and all of the work to create particular patterns, do you see that act, and I'm addressing this at Rob, do you see, but so he'll get the first shot, but everybody else can chime in here. Do you see that provides a very direct outcome in terms of the accessibility outcomes, or do you feel like this is more on the framework authors and the underlying tooling vendors? Do we think that these standards for accessibility are a good path for moving forward, or do we feel like we need to extend and improve upon them?
That's a good one. I think por qué lo nos dos? Why not both? Right? Why not improve the accessibility standards? Right? But also, I do believe that framework authors should take the responsibility on of helping people that use their framework to develop things accessible by default. That's kind of what a framework is there for, right? It's to take harder problems and solve them and make them easier for people to do, you know, faster. And I think that is perfect and right up the alley for frameworks.
Does anybody else have thoughts on the topic?
I really like the idea that the framework can enable people who don't really know anything about this area to just, like, maybe even inadvertently create accessible web pages. If we're able to, like, have some of these efforts bundled in as part of the framework, a lot of the thing that the framework provides is like a structure that we can make certain assumptions about the way that people are structuring their web pages, and if we can, like, you know, use that structure to insert some special magic that suddenly makes everything a little bit better.
Excellent. And Melanie, you had thoughts?
Yeah, I think we see kind of this process among developers, some maybe younger developers, who are sort of unaware that something already exists, so they start a new effort. I think as a little bit older of a developer, I would really love to see us spreading the word really well and getting, it's good to have competition, right? But it's also good to invest in what you've already done and use that as a platform to make something better, to extend something. So I think I'm of the same mindset as Rob. Why not both? But I think the investment in what we already have really is essential. So I probably lean towards that option more just from a, wait, haven't I seen this already, kind of perspective.
Excellent. So I had a conversation with Jesse Beach at one point in time, and she compared accessibility to first wave, second wave, third wave feminism, where the efforts of the accessibility team or accessibility community as related to technology were lining up with the mode of operations of each one of these waves of feminism. Do we see that we are progressing through a similar pattern where, you know, it starts with you have to just fight for a seat at the table, then you have to fight for recognition of your concerns, and then you need to proceed and learn to actually affect change inside of that organization that you are up against. Sometimes that's government, sometimes that's entire technical debt history. Do we see that same progression? Is that something that you experience, whether that in the accessibility community, or do any of you see that same sort of pattern?
I think that I, my thoughts on that particular idea are that I think you're exactly right, Nathan. What we've definitely found is that to build the relationships that we have with the clients that we do work for, and that includes, as I said, you know, banking institutions and insurance companies and government institutions, we often get contacted by the users themselves. They go through their line managers and just say, look, I have to access this piece of software and I can't do my job, so could you please bring in some people to make this accessible for me? And provided they're happy with the service that's provided, you know, we gradually work our way up and sort of find, okay, but there are also kind of holes over here, and, you know, who could we speak to try and actually make this more accessible for users in a general sense and working within your organization. And we find it's a very slow and methodical process of getting to know people and working within an organization to actually affect that change. And, you know, in, obviously in some places it's definitely easier than others, and some are more open and willing to embrace that as part of, you know, I think a lot of companies want to sort of appear to be very much for accessibility standards, but there's also, you know, a bit of resistance as well, because there are too many internal processes. Or so I definitely think that's quite an appropriate analogy.
Excellent. One of the things that I've seen really important as part of the Ember accessibility community is that we want all of us, and this came up in literally every single one of you, in all of your comments, that it was about building the community, about building a team of interested people, about getting everybody engaged. And then once we have that sort of foundational bedrock, everybody benefits whether or not they know it. And so I think that that pushes me into an area of accessible by default, where you don't have to concern yourself with it, except to actually design user experiences for people who are using assistive technology. So we have this assistive technology that has been in the past just mated to the existing markup, whereas there's this one very particular pattern for interacting with any piece of code or any type of code. And so now what we're proposing is actually designing experiences for people who are using assistive technology to make sure that those experiences match the same experiences that we expend tons of energy, tons of time, tons of effort, and entire teams to create a visual experience. And so creating that same quality experience is something that I think we as a community are pushing for and are driving for. I think that if you want to participate in this conversation, we have two great resources where everybody on this podcast actually hang out. One of those is the topic-a11y inside of the Ember community Slack. Everybody on this conversation is actually a part of that. And then there's another resource, which is simply the web accessibility Slack, which is also integrated via Gitter. So you can find these two wonderful resources online, and we'll make sure that we include those in the podcast notes as well. So with that, does anybody else have any parting shots, any thoughts that they think they want to share? Jamie.
So couldn't agree more with all of that, and hope to see anyone listening to this in topic A11Y and in the accessibility Slack. I want to kind of echo what Melanie said regarding best using what we already have. And I'd like to extend it to say that we should be excited by what the web platform already offers and the capabilities that are already there and present. And I think a big part of this drive, a big part of talking about this, giving presentations about this, writing about it, is demonstrating the sorts of not just usable but delightful experiences that you can create for people who are, for example, using screen readers, people who are partially sighted, people for whom an overly subtle color scheme doesn't work. It's not just about making it work full stop for those people, it's about making it work in a way that's as delightful for them as it is for as it is for anyone else who doesn't have to suffer a disability. And I think the more I look at the spec and the more I see the kind of work that's going on in the standards bodies and from the browser vendors and from the engineers who build the operating systems, the more excited I get. I mean, the way I would put this is if you're excited about something like service workers, that kind of capability of the platform, be excited about what you can do on the accessibility front as well, because I think, frankly, it's pretty incredible in some cases.
Thank you so very much. And with that, we have just spent the past 45 minutes, a little bit more, talking about accessibility. You can absolutely find all of us online. We are ready and available to chat about all of this at your convenience, effectively, because somebody will always be hanging out in the channel. So we look forward to hearing from you, and we look forward to actually interacting with you and learning with you and from you. So with that, I'll turn that back over to Tracy.
Thank you so much, Nathan. That was a very, very awesome talk. All of you, it's great to see so many people in the community collaborating on something so important and so awesome. I know whenever I'm coding and it always says, this is an alternative text, I always wonder if people who are either deaf or blind, if they ever want any Easter eggs in there. So have you guys ever done that? Like, is that faux pas to sort of say like, hey, how's it going? I made my site accessible for you.
It's actually against the spec, but it would be kind of fun. Now I'm sort of have that idea.
Yeah. I think about it often. I always question if I actually should be doing that or not. I know, Nathan, last year at Wicked Good, you gave a really amazing accessibility talk as well. So everybody should look that up. And who was that with again?
That was with Jenison Asuncion.
Yes. And he's a very, very great and prolific guy in the accessibility community, correct?
He is. He runs the Bay Area Ember Accessibility Meetup. He also is the accessibility principal, if you will, at LinkedIn, with the rest of his team of six people, which we all have, or we have focused on accessibility.
Very cool. So you can follow Nathan at Nathan Hammond on Twitter. Ben is at Binhums, B-I-N-H-U-M-S. Jamie is at JG White. We have Rob, who's at Rob Del, DEL12. George, I don't know your Twitter handle.
It's at GN Chapman.
And then Melanie, I think you're Melanie R. Sumner on Twitter. And then Suze, you have a really cool Twitter. I remember seeing you were in Hello or New York Kitty or something, which I found really... Is that?
I think that was my location. My location I set to New York Kitty because I thought it was funny because I'm in New York City.
Yes. Well, I found that extremely amusing as well. So again, everybody, you know, join the Ember Slack channel. Even if you guys aren't doing Ember, there's a lot of stuff in the general community. Since all of you guys are Ember folks, I personally know a bunch of these folks over here, and I know that if there is interest in the Angular community or the Polymer community, React community, etc., you guys can still come hang out with these guys, and they're very much happy to direct you guys into the right place. And with that, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Modern Web Podcast, and we'll see you on the next show. Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter @modernweb_. See you around the internet.